Crosswires, navigating news with faith with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Crosswires, today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens, from a layman's questions and a clergyman's reaction. Now, here's Chris and Father Daniel.
Father Daniel, our well-traveled legionary priest, I understand you're back from Prague.
Oh, gosh. It's been a wild month because I was, you know, I was at the pilgrimage in France, then I had a mission trip in Vietnam, and then I had a International Leadership Association conference in Prague.
So the beer capital of the world.
Yeah, and I got to taste a little bit of that beer. It was really good. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Did you know that it's the only place on the planet that Budweiser, the original Budweiser, owns the...
Actually, the locals told me about that. Right. And I saw the signs. There was a boat on the river that said Budweiser. And right. It's not the Budweiser.
It's not Anheuser-Busch. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to start this week with something I read in the Wall Street Journal. There's a safety advisory group, an arm of the city government of Birmingham, England.
Okay.
Which is the second largest city in Britain.
Big place, yeah.
They're prohibiting the fans of an Israeli soccer team from attending a match scheduled on November 6th between Birmingham's Aston Villa team and Maccabi Tel Aviv.
Hmm.
So these prohibitions aren't that unusual given the history of soccer hooliganism in Europe. What's unusual is the fans are being barred, not because they are likely perpetrators of violence, but because they are potential victims.
Hmm.
So following the Manchester synagogue attack, where two men were killed and three were wounded on the Jewish holiday of Yom Kippur, officials are seemingly bowing to anti-Semitism rather than policing it by saying, your fans can't come because we can't protect you. I just find this really odd.
It's pretty bizarre. Yeah, it's really bizarre. Gosh, I don't even know where to start with this one, Chris. There's just so many elements that come into play. I was in Prague. I was able to go up to one of the waypoints for the Nazi transportation of Jews during World War II and visit Terezin. And it's just mind-boggling how people can arrive to the violence and the ideology that gets behind coming to just wiping out people.
Yeah, and I understand some of the violence is associated with this, with the war in Gaza. That it's not
understandable.
It's not just deep-rooted, long-term anti-Semitism. It's anti-Zionism.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Okay, but what is it? I mean, I just still don't get why there is this. You just can never snuff out anti-Semitism. It just has existed forever, and it seems to always. That flame always seems to flicker.
It's strange. There's a lot of factors that come into play, and you know, it's not like they're, that they're always the innocent ones. I mean, there are times when Jewish forces or the Israeli forces have been suppressing the rights of others or of the people in Gaza, and I think we need to recognize that it can cut both ways. So it's not like they're perfectly innocent all the time, but I think that we should have dialogue. We need to respect other people, no matter what their faith. But you're right. There is this this surge of anti-Semitism, which does creep in and come back over and over again.
The same soccer team in 2024 played in Amsterdam, and the team's fans were attacked by particularly by a number of Muslim cabbies.
Mm.
And I think a number of people were. I think there were 60 people hospitalized. So
Wow. That
I think is what they are trying to protect against. Yet it still just boggles my mind. I mean, I know we all know about the German, fans that have caused a lot of problems, but they're again the ones who are perpetrating, not the victims of the violence. You would think that the police would do their job and protect the fans.
Yeah, no, it's a breakdown of coherence in society, and I think what we got to go to is the deeper level here, Chris. Maybe we're not, people are not going to convert and all become, Christians, but we can respect the dignity of every person. And I think when, as a society, we start to no longer respect people, no longer dialogue, that's an indicator of real serious problems.
Well, it's another commentary on the changing nature of our, grandfather nation, England, how the demographics there are quite a bit different.
They're shifting dramatically. The white Christian people are becoming a minority in England and many other countries in Europe. And a lot of political parties are starting to note that. Now, sometimes here in the United States, that gets labeled as ultra-right or nationalist movements. But I think it's just kind of a awakening to the facts of a shifting nature of the country, a shifting nature of the ideology or the ruling worldview of these countries.
Christendom is dead in Europe.
Yeah, that's pretty clear. And I think that there are efforts, though, in many different countries where people are trying to bring it back to a semblance of like normalcy or looking at these issues in a deeper way. I mean, you have the rise of Meloni in Italy, who she came in as the new prime minister prime minister. And she is, you know, advocating for having more children, which is seems like a really radical idea.
In Italy?
Yeah.
They don't have children in Italy.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Well, that's part of their problem. They've imported so many people and it's changed the nature of Italy. So there are movements like this. And a lot of times in the news media, they get branded as ultra-right. But in reality, I think we would find that they're actually very close to just a right-headed way of looking at the world and history.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. One of the world's oldest libraries, the Vatican Apostolic Library, will open a prayer room for Muslims complete with a carpet for praying.
Whoa. Did I hear that right?
Yes.
There's going to be prayer room for Muslims in the Vatican.
The Holy See's library includes millions of theological texts from the Catholic Church, but also other religions, and they have historically selectively opened the library to scholars of all disciplines for scientific or for research purposes. The Vatican's accommodations stand in stark contrast to Islam, mm-hmm. which forbids or severely restricts Christians from even visiting certain holy sites. So,
right.
Like, not, for example, non-Muslims are not allowed to visit the Islam's holy city of Mecca.
Right.
So not only is the Vatican accommodating another religion's practice, but they're actively supporting it by making this accommodation.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So first, do you think the Vatican should be opening a prayer room for Muslims?
Gosh, that is an interesting question. You know, again, you're throwing this topic on me without having time to reflect or think about it.
But what's your gut?
My gut is, at the end of the day, people who are authentically praying to God, God is one. And so if they, and Muslims do believe in one God.
Yeah, and they believe in the Abrahamic God.
Yes, they do. So if they are worshiping God, they have confused ideas about God, but they are worshiping God and in their limited and you know, sometimes misguided ways. But there's an authentic piety and goodness in seeking God, which I think is good to foster. And so if they're seeking God in that sense, I guess I don't have an issue with them praying. Now, the problem is it's not reciprocated. You know, if I've been in Muslim countries before, and I've been in, for example, in the Holy Land, where you have the call to prayer being sounded out from the minarets and all across the city, and it's really annoying. You know, sometimes people complain about church bells. Oh,
yeah.
Let me tell you, the call to prayer is a lot more annoying, and it's really these off-key singing, and it's invasive in a very brutal way. And they're actually specifically timed to interrupt Christian prayer as well. It's fascinating when you look at that from a historical perspective. So it's not, this openness is not reciprocated, and I think that's the real problem.
Yeah, and that's why my gut initial reaction was what you're just referring to, yet it, when I thought about it, sort of speaks to the broader beauty of Christianity, where you don't need it to be reciprocated,
mm-hmm.
you know, that
we give and we love without expecting anything in return.
Right. And so you mentioned how some of these call to prayers are specifically meant to disrupt.
Yeah,
they even are. Christian. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, in my prison ministry that I do, we do a Catholic communion service for the very small number of Catholic prisoners that are in the units. And without fail, we have folks walking through our service, disrupting
intentionally. Yeah, right.
And I have been told that if you were to interrupt the Friday Juma, the Muslim prayer service on Fridays, that if you even breach the boundary mm-hmm. of that, you will be killed.
Wow.
And these guys walk straight through back and forth with a broom or a mop that doesn't need to be just to disrupt these. So disrupt. It is really interesting. The
double standard.
crossed wires.
If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. An Afghan man who murdered a man and his heavily pregnant wife has been executed by the relatives of the victims in front of crowds at a sports stadium under the Taliban's retaliatory punishment system.
So it's, this is a public execution.
Public execution.
Kind of a reprisal, vengeance for guy who killed someone.
In front of crowds at a sports stadium.
Wow, that's
this
sick.
Is the 11th public execution since the Taliban retook power in 2021, this style in a stadium. So
right.
It's mind-boggling.
11th in a stadium?
Correct.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. And so it sort of harkens back to the, you know, public stonings of folks right. in biblical times. What are your thoughts about this?
Well, my thoughts is anytime we put violence on like that on display, whether it's in a stadium like that or we're putting it in movies, like we do that in the United States, we put it in our Hollywood movies all the time. We glorify violence. It's not good. I mean, we're going to live in a violent world. It does happen. But do we need to celebrate it? No, I think in the case of putting it into the stadium, they're trying to send a public statement to people.
Absolutely.
They're making an example to try to dissuade people from falling into this type of crime. There is a public worth to that, but I think we have to be really careful not to glorify violence.
Crossed wires.
If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. According to a Wall Street Journal article, there's a trend where influencers show off prescription bottles while they dance and take pills on camera. One TikTok influencer winks to the camera as she swallows a handful of pills as a voiceover sings, "Girl, take your crazy pills. You know you're mentally ill," to the tune of the pop song, "Girl, Put Your Records On."
Interesting. Okay.
Another influencer this summer launched a line of T-shirts that say, quote, "Don't talk to me until I've had my Lexapro laced iced coffee," unquote.
Oh, my gosh.
Many of wow. these folks are getting their prescriptions from nurse practitioners through telehealth companies like Hims and Hers Health. Mm-hmm. According to the CDC, we've talked about this before, 15.3% of American women over the age of 18 report taking prescription medication for depression.
Hmm.
So when you have to sit through with your kids trying to catch a ball game on TV on the weekends and being deluged with erectile dysfunction ads, and then you hear about this insanity of influencers and they're being paid, mm-hmm. right, to push antidepressants as a lifestyle accessory. I have to agree with the Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy, his pursuit of banning prescription drug mm-hmm. advertisements. What are your thoughts?
I think this is a really interesting idea. So it's worth looking into that because as a society, we know that the pharmaceutical companies are making a lot of money off of these drugs, and they cost a lot more here in the United States than they do in other countries. The same exact same drug, same formula. So there's a multi-billion dollar industry here that is pushing upon us all kinds of medications that a lot of times we don't need or that are actually causing other complications. So I do think that that's a worthwhile discussion to have. Should we just get rid of that public pressure, all those ads for these medications? So I think that's one really interesting argument worth discussing. I think I would be on the side of saying, I don't know. I'd have to think about that a little bit more. Because there's a free speech side of it too, you know?
Yeah, but it goes to the culture of, you know, instead of using mind-altering drugs as a last resort,
mm-hmm.
I mean, using having
just
them as a
mainstream,
as a lifestyle accessory, like you know,
that's
like
problematic.
Everybody's doing it.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing about a lot of these commercials on TV is they tell all the wonderful things, and there's always these images of, you know, happy jumping dogs and happy families meeting each other, and then at the end they say in a really really quick text, you know, it may cause this, and you're like, holy smokes!
Yeah,
if I don't want any of those side effects, that sounds horrible. So I think that there's a case that could be made for maybe getting rid of those. Interesting discussion, but I think we have to look at the deeper question here, Chris. like what is going on as a society that we've got to take all these drugs, these antidepressants? You know, I was going into I had an early morning mass this morning. I was going into a place where there was a young lady who was sitting at the reception desk, and she had a cross on her neck, and she had her Bible there. And I asked her, you know, what room I was supposed to go to. And she looked at me and she said, "Are you a priest? Are you?" And I'm wearing my collar, so it's pretty obvious. And I said, "Yes, I'm a Catholic priest." She said, Oh, that's wonderful. And she said, "Do you know where I can find out about deliverance ministry?" And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" She said, "Well, you know, some things going on in my life and really depressed and struggling with things." I said, "Well, you know, we've got to separate out what is psychological from demonic things. So, I mean, the public information for where you're going to find the exorcist of the diocese, but you can call the diocese, you can ask about that," because that's what she was asking about. But then we talked a little bit about depression. And I said, "Hey, have you gone off of social media?" And immediately she said, "Yes, I deleted my social media accounts," because the statistics and the studies now are showing very, very clear correlation and even causation between the social media usage and depression and anxiety, especially in young women. And this young woman was aware of that, and she deleted her social media, but she was still struggling with depression. And I think a lot of young people do, but it's because of our lifestyle primarily. That's the deeper thing we need to be looking at as a society.
Yeah, and there's no doubt there are some people who are chemically imbalanced and suffer depression. But what's happened now is we have any instance that causes you to be sad or quote unquote depressed, not the psychiatric definition of depression, we feel the need to
take
find
an upper.
To find something to do away with that symptom rather than experiencing the symptom. And maybe with the potential fruit that it might bear.
Right.
So,
well, we could make a similar argument for sleepiness. I mean, if I'm a little bit tired, what do?
You take a nap.
I'm drinking Dr. Pepper right here.
Oh, I take a nap.
But I don't drink coffee, but a lot of people will take coffee as an antidote to being tired.
Okay, but
first
it's
thing you do when you wake up in the morning.
But it's not a mind altering drug that's affecting your emotions. Well, there is the potential for it to do so, but it's not a psychotropic drug.
It's not a psychotropic, but it is a drug. I mean, caffeine is an accelerant for, you know, a stimulant, yep. And it does counter, but it has side effects as well. So I think we could make the case for a lot of things in our society. And we do need to have that discussion about, all right, what are the side effects of these drugs?
All right, but nobody needs to make the case that we need to be doing away with our coffee.
Oh, I make it all the time. I think of the thousands and thousands of dollars I've saved in my life by not drinking coffee. It's amazing. But I'm just kind of kidding aside, Chris. These are conversations that we should have, and I'm glad you brought this up.
Crossed Wires.
If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. AI Robotics Venture Strategy 3 Limited. This is the company behind a web tool called CloveOff that is being sued. The company AI Robotics Venture is being sued by a New Jersey teenage girl whose real photo was allegedly transformed by a classmate into at least one fake nude using clothes removal software.
Hmm.
So the company, which I think has Belarusian ties, is being sued, and so is the platform that delivered it, which I think was some kind of, I don't know what the platform was, but Instagram or whatever. So the plaintiff was 14 when she posed for a photo in which she was wearing a bathing suit. She posted the photo to Instagram and then alleges it was used by a classmate to create this fake nude picture. Yep. So can you imagine the pressures of being a teenager today?
Oh, yeah.
A high school girl, okay, a young high school girl, knowing there's a nude photo, even though it's a deep fake of her circling on social media apps, and you know, the having to explain to everybody it's not real, but even then it's out there.
It looks real.
And it looks real. Mm-hmm. It's mind-boggling the things that teenagers have to defend against today.
Pressures and terrible things, yeah.
Yeah. Any other thoughts about, you know, the life of a teenager today? I mean, you know, it's another reason why these kids shouldn't really be on social media.
It is a reason, but I think certainly the pressures are out there in new ways that we did not experience when we were teenagers. But it always goes back to the same things. I mean, what is it that drives human nature? Desire for sex, desire for anger or revenge, desire for love. I mean, there's common themes that are always there for young people. It's just that the pressures are put on in a different way today. And I think it always comes back to, like, how do we look at this as a Catholic? Let's honor the dignity of the human person. Let's respect people. And a software, which is basically artificially stripping off the clothing of people, is inherently wrong. It's evil.
I just can't. So when I was a kid, I had a broken leg. I got run over by a car, actually. I had a broken leg. And I remember I still to this day can feel the cringe of, had some classmates come visit me at my home. And I'm in bed. And my mom pulled the sheet off my cast on my broken leg and exposed, and I'm wearing my tighty whities, and I was so mortified.
Right.
I was so mortified. Yep. Okay. Now contrast that with this girl who's got this picture going around. So she's not the only one. This stuff's going on now, you know, all the time.
And it's one of the things, unfortunately, you know, as a priest, we have to do a regular update on abuse cases and avoiding these type of things. And this is a way that predators leverage young women or boys. They get these deep fake videos, or they get them to give a picture in a moment of weakness, and they use that to push them into further things. So it's a horrible practice, and I think we need to be attentive as a society to try to root this out.
Crossed Wires.
If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires.
A new superintendent for the Oklahoma State Department of Education will rescind a mandate from the previous superintendent that forced public schools to place Bibles in classrooms and incorporate the book into lesson plans for students. If the Bible, I don't think this is subjective, I think it's universally regarded as the most influential book in human history.
Mm-hmm.
Fair to say?
Statistical and scientific basis, yes.
So if the Bible is the most influential book in human history, what's wrong with teaching from the Bible and not just about the Bible?
That's a great question, Chris. And I think that we've come into this notion in our country that somehow the Bible is divisive or that it's sectarian. But look at all the things we've talked about in this show today. We talked about Jews being hated in England and they can't even go to a soccer match because they're going to get killed. We've talked about Muslims and how the Vatican has accommodated. We've talked about Muslims killing other Muslims in stadium executions. We're talking about some ugly things that are going on in our society and our world. Don't we need a little bit of beauty, goodness, love, charity? I mean, that's what the Bible is proposing. And you can link a lot of the societal ills that we have in our country back to the fact that we kicked religion out of our public schools. We took out prayer. So
yeah, the key Supreme Court case here is Abington School District versus Shemp in 1963,
right,
which struck down mandatory Bible readings and the Lord's Prayer in public schools. However, in Justice Tom Clark's majority opinion, here's what he wrote, quote, "The Bible is worthy of study for its literary and historic qualities. Nothing we have said here indicates that such study of the Bible or of religion, when presented objectively as part of a secular program of education, may not be affected consistently with the First Amendment." We've thrown that to the curb. Nobody says that about teaching from the Bible today.
That is a really fascinating quote. I've never heard that before. And I think he's spot on, but he's obviously missing an element, because there's a richness for the Bible, not only from a cultural and historical perspective, but from a personal meaning and purpose and the meaning of life. So he's missing that dimension. But even from an atheistic standpoint, there's great value in the Bible. And how, as a society, we can just completely excise it from public discourse, there's something really sick with that.
Well,
and it's leading
even
to these ills that we're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, even just the secular history lesson value, right? That the Bible, right? It always blows my mind. So I went to the University of Texas, and, you know, which is like every university, especially in the city of Austin, which is a pretty liberal town.
Right.
But in the stone engraving on the main plaza of the tower of the university, what's engraved there? Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. Mm-hmm. Who's that a quote from?
Mm-hmm.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I don't even know if they know that.
Probably not. And that's the really sad thing, that somehow the notion has pervaded our country that the Bible is divisive, that it's hurting people. It does the opposite. And I think this is where we need to have a conversation as a society about what values do we want to build our society upon? Sharia law? I mean, we know what that leads to. I mean, a Muslim worldview, which is a fusion of church and state in which there's no tolerance whatsoever. Well, we're seeing that being played out in many countries around the world. I don't think we want to build our society upon that. I mean, the very fact that we have Muslims coming into our country, Buddhists, Hindus, we can accept them all, we can love them all, but they need to accept a worldview which is open-minded. And unfortunately, that's not present in many of those religions. And that's our Christian basis of our society. If there is an open-mindedness, there's a tolerance that comes from our biblical principles.
But even those other religions aside, if you're looking at it just from an atheistic view,
right?
If it's the most influential book in history, I mean, it needs to be taught. Even if it's not about moral conversion, it needs to be taught.
Well, but look at it from their perspective. They see things in the Bible that, you know, speaking against homosexuality, or there's slavery, there's pogroms. So they're looking at it as a book of violence, a book of separation, a book of hatred.
Slavery is a historical fact. Jews were enslaved
in our world today, unfortunately.
Yeah, for hundreds and hundreds of years. It's right. Not, you know, I had a friend once ask me about the Ten Commandments, and, you know, there was a certain phraseology not in the Catholic version of the Ten Commandments, but it had, you know, the reference to a slave. Mm-hmm. And he was like, how can you, you know, advocate the Ten Commandments? And I'm like, you don't understand the history of slavery. Right. I mean, this is not a racial thing that just existed starting in the, you know.
It's a societal and human reality that's lasted throughout all human history. So, and I think this is where the part of the value of the Bible comes in, and where we do need to have it as a text, even in our public schools, getting us a historical perspective, learning to wrestle through these things, and understanding the deeper purpose that God has in human history.
If there's a topic you'd like Father Daniel to address, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back again next week with a different take on the news.
This has been Crosswires, navigating news with faith, with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens. On AM 1160, The Quest.